All right, guys, I got my first look at the 2023 Tennessee football team yesterday. Day one of spring practice is in the books. What were my biggest takeaways, and what were some of the biggest things Josh Heupel had to say following practice number one? That, hoops talk, whole lot more right here on your Tuesday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
A good Tuesday, everybody, and welcome into it. Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day, and for watching it on YouTube and subscribing to the Locked On Vols YouTube channel. You go ahead and turn those notifications on so whenever I schedule something for it to release, it will notify you and kind of let you know when this content is live. So go ahead and turn on those notifications. No better time to do it than right now because, of course, Tennessee is in the Sweet 16. Tennessee basketball and spring football practice has officially begun. So a whole lot to get into here on a Tuesday, but please continue to support the show by subscribing, leaving me a positive review on Apple Podcasts, and rating me 5 stars. I really do appreciate you guys. All right, spring practice number one is in the books. What did I notice out on the practice field on Monday? What did Josh Heupel say the biggest things after practice number one, kind of looking into the rest of the week? That's coming up here in segment number one. Segment number two, I want to get into a discussion that I don't necessarily like the word narrative. I try not to use it an awful lot because I feel like it's overused, but there is a narrative out there that Tennessee basketball is a dirty team, and it just cracks me the hell up. And I'll get more into it in segment number two, but you want to talk about lazy-ass takes by lazy-ass media members. Sorry for the language if you got kids in the car, but it just is what it is. More on that in segment two. I promise those are the only two cuss words I'll use on the day. Two times I'll cuss, rather. And then we'll get into your mailbag questions in segment number three. All that and more here on a Tuesday show. Okay, so spring practice. Got out on the practice field, as Josh Heupel put it, getting out there on the grass. But, of course, they were indoors because it was so dang cold on Monday morning. So they were really on the turf. But it was really, really cool to kind of see football going again. They just had the helmets on. Didn't necessarily have the pads popping. No shoulder pads, just helmets and jerseys. And, of course, there's an acclimation period there. So looking forward to that. Coming up later this morning, if you're listening to this early on a Tuesday morning, we'll be over there for spring practice. And this is the we get two practices like this a year, once in spring practice and once in fall camp, where we get to see basically half a practice. We get to see periods 0 through 10, and it's roughly about an hour long. And you just get to see a lot more, and it's good to be out there. Now, keep in mind, when we go and view practice, we're not there all the time. We're not there the entire time. We view period 0 through 2 and for those of you guys that don't keep up with the highlights or the practice reports and all that type of stuff, literally all we get to see every time we get to go see practice, and keep in mind, we don't get to see practice in the regular season. Josh Heupel doesn't do it that way, but during spring practice and during camp, he lets us go, which is good. Something is better than nothing. But the periods we get to see, and this was the same with Jeremy Pruitt, so I'm not trying to say this is a Josh Heupel thing, but period 0 through 2. Period 0 is literally stretching, okay? It is literally stretching. We're out there while they're stretching. And it's good for people like me because I take role. Okay, who's in a red jersey? Who's off to the side getting some work in? Who is not a full participant? It's good for that type of stuff. But, you know, period 1 is individual work, or circuits, if you will. Defense will go over there and do tackling and turnover circuits every single day. Offensive stuff will break off into their drills and start individual. And then period 2 is individual and some group work. But we get to see the same thing every single time we go to see practice. But today's practice, Tuesday's practice, we get to see about half of it. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'll come back with some more notes, excuse me, right here on Locked On Vols. About choked there. Hold on. All right, I'm alive. Here we go. But what did I see on Monday? Well, I couldn't agree more, and Josh Heupel kind of echoed my thoughts when he met with the media after practice and kind of said this. But I immediately was like, okay, this team looks different because they have depth. For the first time in quite a while, really, since Josh Heupel's been here, you can look at position group and then go to this position group and then go to this position group. And for the most part, you have guys and a lot of guys who have played – and you have experienced backups, right? And that's what good teams are built off of. This team has depth. And that's a good thing. Now, are there still some areas of concerns? Heck yeah. Tight end, backup center. Still got to find some people to play in the secondary. Still replacing quarterback Hendon Hooker. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like this team has arrived, but there is some depth there. Now, that's just quality of offseason after offseason after offseason, recruiting, transfer portal, playing young guys. And it's kind of a accumulation of all that type of stuff to kind of get you where you are today. So that was my one big takeaway. This team has got some serious depth compared to what it had this time last year, and certainly what it had this time 2 years ago for Josh Heupel's first spring practice. Josh Heupel was obviously asked about Nico Iamaleava, the five-star quarterback, number one rated 2023 prospect, according to On3. And the question was kind of asked, like, hey, how do you go about trying to get Nico ready and not, you know, not giving him too much and all that type of stuff? And Josh Heupel's like, well, I mean, we got to go. Like, we're going to push him to play. I mean, if you look at where we are numbers-wise in the quarterback room, I mean, like he's got to be ready to go, and that couldn't be more true because you have two scholarship quarterbacks right now. Your third string technically is Gaston Moore. Your fourth string would be Navy Schuler. You got four quarterbacks. You got Joe Milton, Nico Iamaleava, Gaston Moore, Navy Schuler. It's not a whole lot of cooks in the kitchen there. And Gaston Moore might be elevated to a scholarship guy before it's all said and done. But remember, you had Taven Jackson. He left the transfer portal to go to Indiana. So not a whole lot of depth at the quarterback position. And so he's got to get him ready. If Joe's helmet pops off or if Joe Milton gets hurt, it's going to be Nico that goes in there. And of course, remember, there's still a quarterback, not controversy, there's a quarterback competition right now. But it's going to be Joe Milton. So that's kind of what he said about Nico Iamaleava, and I couldn't agree more. Oregon transfer wide receiver Dante Thornton looked good. And again, take it with a grain of salt. Day one, helmets only, no pads. They're running routes on air. They're throwing routes on air. Everybody's supposed to look good. But going in the slot, he's got lineup flexibility. He can play slot and outside. I think his best position on this football team to help Tennessee would be on the outside. But he's going to master the slot first, along with Squirrel White. And he looked good running routes, man. He's long, he's lengthy, he's explosive, he's got soft hands, runs skinny routes, catches it, get upfield. He looked good on day one, and I think he's going to be a player for Tennessee. And that kind of, you know, if he stays in slot and he masters the slot and Tennessee locks him in the slot, what's that to mean for Ramel Keaton on the outside potentially? Could Tennessee experiment with going four wide receiver sets? I don't think so, because we know how critical the tight end position is. But I thought that Dante Thornton looked pretty good in the slot on yesterday. And then one other note I have, Cam Seldon, got a good look at him over at running back. And, yeah, he's every bit of about 217 pounds. Big guy, a thick guy, and he's bigger than all the other running backs there. He looked good. I mean, good footwork. I mean, I didn't get to see him do an awful lot, but he and Deshaun Bishop, a local talent here from Carnes High School, the two freshmen here for spring practice, kind of sitting back, watching, learning, and then jumping in, getting a rep. There's going to be a lot of that for these freshmen, these newcomers. And Josh Heupel even said that, like, hey, the last five practices for all these newcomers are going to be much better than the first five practices because they're getting acclimated to Tennessee's culture, to Tennessee's offense, Tennessee's defense, all that type of stuff. So those are some of the highlights for me from practice number one for Tennessee spring practice. It is officially here, and I'll come back with a whole lot of notes after viewing Tuesday's practice. We get to see an hour's worth, so I am really, really looking forward to that. All right, so spring football's here. It is an exciting time, but let's talk a little basketball. Tennessee basketball is on to the Sweet 16, but there's a narrative out there. Yes, I said the word. There's a narrative out there. We're going to discuss that here in segment number two, but first, the tournament is heating up. And now is the perfect time to download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's America's number one sportsbook because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It is safe, it's secure, and it is super easy to use. You can bet on the spread, the money line, the total. You can go over, you can go under. Individual player props such as points, rebounds, assists. Whatever the case may be, with Tennessee in the Sweet 16, you can win you some money over at FanDuel Sportsbook. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a bigger payout with same-game parlay. So don't miss your chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That is FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn even more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, guys, welcome back into it. Your Tuesday edition of Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane. Spring football is underway, so come back here to Locked On Vols each and every morning. Make it your first listen here on YouTube. Make it your first watch. Subscribe to the channel, and you're going to get the up to the current date information on Tennessee football in spring practice. Let's shift gears here. Let's talk some Tennessee hoops, and why not? Tennessee basketball, it is Sweet 16 bound. Tennessee basketball, we know the opponent now. It's going to be Florida Atlantic University. The 9 seed, FAU, took down the 16th seeded Fairleigh Dickinson University, FDU, 78-70 Sunday night. And so we know the opponents, we know the location, we know the date, we know the time now. It's going to be Tennessee against FAU, a 4 versus a 9, Thursday night at 9 o'clock. We can't have nice things. That's too late. That is too late to be in front of a camera at 11, 12 o'clock in the, at midnight. For me, it's too late to be in front of a camera. You can't fix ugly, right? I don't look good in front of a camera to begin with. And, you know, late at night, you know, I got to let the hair down and, you know, all that type of stuff. So whatever. But yeah, so Tennessee Sweet 16 bound. And I made the comment, if you guys listen to VolQuest as well, I didn't really get a chance to the VolQuest podcast that comes out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I didn't really get a chance to kind of show my work, if you will, which is unfortunate. So good thing I have my own platform here and I can do that as well. But we just didn't have time to get to it. But I kind of made the comment like, hey, knowing that anytime Tennessee loses, it's disappointing. Knowing Tennessee's only been to one Elite Eight ever, you know, knowing all this, and also knowing your opponent, it's a 9 seed. If Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee's playing house money regardless of that, right? And the other three on the panel disagree with me, in large part because of who the opponent is. And I get that. You know, Tennessee, it's got a higher seed. It's a 4 of a 9. I understand all that. I'm going to get to my actual segment topic here in just one moment. But I get all that. But still, the way I look at it, I mean, the way Tennessee was playing since February 1st, since Tennessee was 5-7 entering the NCAA tournament, the way Tennessee lost to Kaiser, the way Tennessee could not find a way to close out games, the way Tennessee was losing to teams it shouldn't have been losing to, I mean, and I'm sure you're not much different, guys. I mean, I was like, if Tennessee gets it to the second weekend, good on Tennessee. Way to go. Job well done. I'm not expecting it. I picked Tennessee to lose to Duke in the second round. I mean, you know, when I was filling out a bracket, when I was looking at the projections and all that, I'm like, okay, Tennessee should get by Louisiana. Tennessee might be favored against Duke, but I think that'll be a challenging matchup because of the 2 7-footers. But, you know, and I know Tennessee struggles, and it's hard to win tournament basketball games. I get that. But anyway, I pretty much said, hey, if you get to the second weekend, you're playing with house money. Now, seeing your opponent, now seeing the path to the Elite Eight, I understand all that. Because, if it was Tennessee against Purdue in the Sweet 16, maybe you're not playing with – then you're playing with house money. But still, what Tennessee's overcome to get to the point that it is now, I mean, it's just like, dang. Like, you're making it farther than what a lot of people thought you would. So, that's kind of how I feel. But understanding, if you lose to FAU – the outcry is going to be loud. It's going to be disappointing. You're a better basketball team. Tennessee's going to be favored to win this basketball game. It already is, and Tennessee should win this basketball game. But that's kind of where the house money comment, maybe you guys heard me say that over the weekend as well, but that's kind of my thoughts on the house money comment. But anyway, what I want to get into in this segment, as I've already blown the clock through halfway through this segment, but it's fine. There's this narrative out there that Tennessee is a dirty basketball team. And again, I've watched every Tennessee basketball game. I'm sure you guys have watched every Tennessee basketball game if you're listening and watching this podcast. And what? Like, why? Like, I understand it was a physical basketball game against Duke. I understand that Uros was very physical with Phil Bukowski. I get all that. Also, John Shire, Duke's head coach, never said anything. Duke's players, Phil Bukowski in particular, actually said, hey, quote, no disrespect to any of the teams that we played. Tennessee's the most physical basketball team that we've gone up against this year, even more so than Purdue. And, you know, it was nothing but praise from the Duke side from inside that locker room, as far as I can see, unless I've missed something. But you get this narrative out there from, and you go to the monitor a couple times to check and see if there was a flagrant foul, and they come back and say, no, there was not a flagrant foul. You get people, you get basketball fans, you get media members who don't watch basketball year-round, who especially don't watch Tennessee basketball year-round, and that's okay. I mean, especially if you're somebody else covering another program, and I cover Tennessee. I don't watch every single Purdue basketball game. I don't watch every single North Carolina basketball game. I mean, I get it, but there's just a lot of people, and it's just lazy. You come in, you see a physical basketball team play, you see some bumping and grinding, right? And I mean, I'm not saying that Uros was going in there and trying to hand out flowers. I mean, he was playing physical and everything. Did I think any of those plays were super, super dirty? No. Also, I know how Uros plays. I don't consider him a dirty player, but he's not that good at basketball, guys. Like, I mean, it just is what it is. He plays hard. He's a great teammate. He's fiery. He plays with an edge, and that's all great. I would never consider that a dirty player, okay? But there are lazy, lazy people in this world, if you didn't know. There are lazy, lazy members of the national media, in case you didn't know. Some of my favorites here, let me just pull it out. You know, Doug Gottlieb tweets after Tennessee's game, "Tennessee going to the Elite Eight after losing their point guard is not what anyone who paid attention expected." Of course, he's already saying Tennessee's going, at this time it was going to be either the 16 or the 9. Now we know it's FAU the 9, but already saying Tennessee's going to get past that matchup. Says, "Tennessee going to the Elite Eight and losing their point guard is not what anyone who paid attention expected. Not a fan of the dirty stuff, but Tennessee was so physical, Duke couldn't do much of anything." I agree with the second part. Tennessee was so physical, Duke really didn't have an answer. But Doug Gottlieb saying, "I'm not a fan of the dirty stuff." Guys, if you don't know who that is, do a Google search. Look at his history. That's pretty funny to me. He also tweets, this is exactly what it is like to play in Europe. He also says something else that I'm not going to say because it's a bad word. I'm not going to say it here on this podcast. Pretty much trashing Uros Plavšić. And so it's just funny to me. You have Jay Billis. Great basketball mind. I love listening to his analysis on basketball, okay? But he's a Dookie. I mean, everybody knows it, right? I mean, everybody goes to school somewhere, okay? But when you're in front of a microphone, when you are giving analysis, I mean, God bless. Like, you've got to be straight down the middle. You've got to. Especially in a national setting. Kirk Herbstreit does a fan-freaking-tastic, for the most part, does a fan-freaking-tastic job. I remember a couple years ago, Clemson, Ohio State in the national championship game. He's a Buckeye. His sons played, I think they're walk-ons, but his twin sons played and were members of the Clemson football team, and that dude called it straight down the middle. Like, I respect the heck out of people like that. But Jay Billis is constantly, since Saturday, just criticizing Tennessee, criticizing the officiating in that basketball game. And, I mean, he's hurt because his team lost. Says, quote, "I can't understand why. I've talked to several officials about it, and all of them seem to agree that should have not happened that way," talking about some of the foul calls on Uros and how they should have been flagrant and whatnot. It's like, dude, just try to hide it. At least just try. Just try to attempt it at least. And then, I mean, there's been a whole lot more. Don't get me wrong. Seth Greenberg's chimed in. Talked about Jay Billis, Doug Gottlieb. I believe Jay Wright said a few things. I mean, it's a lot of people. I'm just finding some that I got pulled up here. And then you have Florida Atlantic head coach Dusty May, which, by the way, who cares, right? You truly are playing house money. You're a 9 seed in the Sweet 16. Good on you. So anything you say doesn't really matter because you're not winning a national championship. We see Cinderellas all the time, but you are not winning a national championship, okay? Like, I think we can all agree that. So if you're Dusty May, and after the win over Dickinson the other night, 78-70, you're advancing on. Last question to him in his press conference was asked about Tennessee and, of course, the Sweet 16 matchup. He says, quote, "We're going to study Australian rugby rules and get ready for the Vols." Okay. Like, what are you doing? Like, and again, to be fair, I have not seen the video of this. I've just read the quote. Maybe there were some laughs in there. Maybe he was smiling. I don't know. But still, it's like, okay, that doesn't really make sense to me. And Barnes was asked about it on Monday. Rick Barnes, Tennessee head coach, was asked about it on Monday. And, Rick Barnes is just, he's great. He says, well, you know what? I took a Big East All-Star team to Australia back in the 90s. We went to a match and I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I mean, Rick Barnes, he's always has a good comeback for anything. And boy, has he changed. Because back in the day, back in the 90s, man, when he and even before that, man, when he first got to the ACC with Clemson, he and Dean Smith, whoo, goodness gracious, they would go after it. He's cooled a little in old age, but it's like, what are you doing, Dusty May? Like, why are you even saying that? I don't know. Just this whole national, and again, I'm going to use the word narrative, that Tennessee's a dirty basketball team. It's lazy. It's lazy. Everybody tunes in to watch the tournament. Everybody's watching that primetime game. You got one game coming on, then another game coming on, then another game coming on. And we have now, what, 575 characters we can tweet out and express our thoughts, which is way too many. It's just lazy. I don't get on here and pretend to be an expert on Northwestern football because I don't watch Northwestern football. I cover Tennessee football. I cover Tennessee sports. It's just, people are lazy. So I wouldn't get too worked up about it. I think it's more funny than anything. And if I'm Tennessee, I'm using this. It's us against the world type mentality, right? Ron Slay said something on the Rocky's Eye Rewind the other night, and I think we played it actually, this portion of it that I'm about to mention. I think we played it on yesterday's show. He kind of says, hey, just when you think everything's going according to plan, when something goes off script, that's March Madness. That's when you kind of have to like regroup and figure it out. Everything was going perfect for Tennessee last year, and Tennessee gets bounced in the second round. Tennessee's limping into March Madness this year, and Tennessee's on to the Sweet 16 with a real good chance to go on to the Elite Eight. So anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on that. Wouldn't pay too much attention to it. This Tennessee team is a lot of things. It is not dirty. Tennessee football is not dirty. If any Tennessee team you can make the case for in terms of playing the game dirty and some of their antics would be Tennessee baseball of a couple years ago. But again, Tennessee basketball being dirty, it's silly. It's a silly, silly argument. All right, when we come back, going to get into your mailbag questions. Got four good ones. We're to conclude here a Tuesday show coming up next right here on Locked On Vols. All right, guys, welcome back into it. Your Tuesday edition on Locked On Vols. Got one more tweet that I just found, and you know when I'm recording this in real time, on how people just don't want Tennessee to be in the dance. I mean, or they don't want Tennessee to make it this far. Kind of a us against the world mentality, right? Darren Rovell, who I'm sure everybody listening and watching just loves, right? Darren Rovell says, Madison Square Garden could have been Purdue, Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State. Instead, you wind up with Michigan State, Tennessee, Kansas State, and then the winner of FAU, FDU. Of course, this is before that game on Sunday. Cry me a flipping river, Darren Rovell. Jeez. All right, let's move on. We got your Twitter Tuesday mailbag questions every single Tuesday right here on the show. Let's start off with Kurt. With the NFL draft coming up, who is one Vol who had a surprisingly good pro career that you didn't expect while they were at UT? And who is the one Vol who busted or disappointed in the NFL that you thought for sure they'd be a star while at UT? Great question. You know, we could really make this a show if you want to do this further on in the offseason. I listed two for each. I know you said one, but I listed two for each. And remember, young money here. We're going to go recent Vol history. Yakim Johnson. If you don't know who that is, well, he was not a star here at Tennessee whatsoever. Played linebacker here for Tennessee back during the Butch Jones era. And I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing his name right. Yeah, it's Yakim Johnson. He played fullback for the Patriots for a while. I believe he's with the Las Vegas Raiders now, but I mean, God, he's going on probably, what, 8-9 year NFL career? Yakim Johnson as a fullback, not a linebacker, as a fullback, carving out a niche in the NFL and when there's not that many fullbacks. So he came to my mind number one in terms of players who surprised that I just would never have envisioned. Number two is Emmanuel Mosley. Boy, he just signed with the Detroit Lions. You talk about a good, good NFL career at cornerback, one of the hardest positions to play in all sports. Actually, the hardest, my tagline here, Eric Kane. On my tombstone, quarterback, most important position in all of sports. Cornerback, hardest position in all of sports. Anyway, Emmanuel Mosley has gotten a couple of big contracts. Good on him. Those are the two players that performed that I would have never envisioned. And then the two that maybe were bust and or disappointing. I'm going to show my work on this first one. Actually, I'll give the easier one first. I'll say Justin Hunter. And maybe that's close to home because I'm a Titans fan. He was a second round pick. I understand he was only 200 pounds and all that, but 6'4", second-round pick, man. We saw what he did at Tennessee in the SEC. I thought Justin Hunter was going to do some things. That boy was a bust. Derek Barnett is the other one that comes to mind. And again, I understand. I realize he's still playing in the National Football League. In fact, he just signed a new contract with the Philadelphia Eagles. I get all that. And he's a role player in the National Football League. But he was a first-round draft pick. And I thought, just seeing his college career, seeing his NFL draft process, pro days, combine, all that type of stuff. Seeing his height, his stature, his weight, all that type of stuff, I just thought he was going to be a star. And again, he's had a good career. He is not a bust by any stretch of the imagination. But that one kind of came in terms of a disappointment for me because I thought he would be just better. Kurt, really good question there. Let's go to JP. Are people overestimating the three annual rivals' effect on strength of schedule? Playing every team every other year, there should be way less variance within the conference. Therefore, strength of schedule will be way more even than it has been in decades, and people's outrage is unfounded, right? I'm not going to lie to you. I've read this a couple of times, and I'm not the sharpest pencil in the pencil box here. I'm not the best, what's that saying? See, perfect example. Sharpest tool in the tool shed, whatever. I read that a couple of times. I'm trying to get into what you actually mean by that. And I it's not your fault. It's me. I'm stupid. Because every team in the SEC, or just anybody in general, or SEC, is going to play every other team in the conference once every 2 years. Yes, that's what's going to happen in the 16-team SEC, no divisions, three permanent opponents, 6-3 model. There should be way less variance in the conference. Agreed. Therefore, strength of schedule will be way more, maybe as a collective for the conference, but maybe not for that individual team. Does that make sense? Like, the strength of schedule overall, the way I'm going to understand it, might go down on a year-to-year basis because you're playing so many different teams, so many new teams, but for the conference as a whole, maybe it increases. Like, take Tennessee, for example. Tennessee's still going to play Alabama. It is what it is. But Tennessee's going to play Alabama, Vanderbilt, let's just say South Carolina for right now. But Tennessee will play Texas A&M, LSU, Auburn when it's up, Florida, of course, Georgia every other year. But Tennessee won't be playing Georgia every year now. You know, so many years you've had that SEC West where LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, all right inside the top 25. You're not going to be playing each other every single year. So does that make sense? I think from a conference's perspective, it'll help be more evenly distributed, but maybe not so much for an individual team basis. I don't know. Maybe I made that way more complicated than it should be, and maybe I'm missing the point completely, but that's just kind of how my mind works. So hopefully I did the best I could there. All right, let's go to Nate. Nate says, this is after the win on Saturday over Duke. Heck yeah, what a game for the Vols fans. For Twitter Tuesday, is this the best game Tennessee has played all year considering Double Z is out? And he clarifies, to be clear, not just since Ziegler's been out, better than wins against Kansas, Texas, Alabama. Yeah, 100%. This is more impressive than those wins because you're exactly right. Tennessee beats Alabama without Julian Phillips and Josiah Jordan-James. Tennessee beat Kansas without Josiah Jordan-James. Tennessee beat Texas without, I believe, Triple J. But nonetheless, those guys are great, but your field general, your point guard, the guy that makes everything go, really, and your best, arguably your best defender, he was all SEC defensive squad this year, arguably your best defender, and your perimeter defense has suffered since he's been gone. So for me, I'm going to say yes. I think getting a win like this on this stage, do or die, win or go home, against a quality opponent who was playing better than arguably anybody in the country at that point in time, without Ziegler, your point guard, the guy that starts everything, I would say yes, absolutely. That's kind of how I'd answer that question. And then finally, we're going to wrap up this edition of Locked On Vols by heading to Facebook, where Matthew chimes in and says, okay, here we go. Is it time to sound the alarm on Tennessee baseball? On the brink of being 0-5 versus Power 5 schools. This was during the Sunday doubleheader. And I won't spend an awful lot of time on this because I know we're about to run out of time, but I do cover Tennessee baseball for VolQuest.com. A lot of you guys check out my work, and I appreciate you for reading and keeping up with me on there. Tennessee baseball's got some problems. It does. It's got some problems. Poor defense. Slow and at times unathletic outfield, overly aggressive hitters. The lineup lacks plate discipline. The bottom third of the lineup is a train wreck because there's no solidity there. This past weekend, starting pitching was atrocious, and that's what you can hang your hat on. base running blunders and the defense. Oh, the defense this past weekend was just a train wreck. And again, I wrote in the weekly 3-2-1 over at VolQuest.com. If you haven't read it, go check it out if you want to. I posted it early Monday morning. I don't sugarcoat things. I know you know you guys who listen and watch me know that I don't sugarcoat things, but also I'm not overly negative. That's just not really my style. At least I don't try to be. That's just not me. But sometimes it just is what it is. This past weekend in Missouri, it was what it was. Tennessee was abysmal. Just flat out abysmal. Now, 0-5 against Power 5 opponents. Tennessee playing anybody with a pulse, if you will. It's not been great. You got to figure some things out. You got to solidify that outfield. You got to solidify that bottom third of the order. These starters have got to get back on track. You can't, when the margin for error is so thin, you can't do stupid stuff in the field. And this outfield's got to get it together. So, I mean, yeah, Tennessee's got a lot to work through. I mean, I said all those things a couple different times, a couple different ways. Tennessee's got some things to work through. But again, you still have what? So you played 19 games. You still have like, what, 27, 29 games? I don't know. You still have a ton of games left, almost 30 games left. This is SEC series number one. I understand if you're having issues at Missouri, what's going to happen when you're at Baton Rouge? What's going to happen when you're in Fayetteville, Arkansas? What's going to happen when you're home against Florida and Vanderbilt? I get all that. What's going to happen this weekend against Texas A&M? It's not going to get any easier, but it's still early. So, time to panic? No. But do we recognize that this team, and still knowing, again, knowing, if you're new to Tennessee baseball, if you want to root on a winning program like Tennessee baseball and you haven't watched much of Tennessee baseball in the last couple of years, let me just real quick paint a few pictures here. Going to Omaha is not the norm. Leading the nation in home runs is not the norm. Winning 57 games is not the norm. What Tennessee baseball has been under Tony Vitello the past couple of years has been the exception. It has been the best. Of course, you want to win the College World Series. I recognize that. But the level Tennessee's been at the last couple of years has been the pinnacle. Okay, this team was never going to be last year's team or the 2021 team. Okay, they can still be good. They can. And I think they can still figure it out, but they're not going to be that team. So knowing all that, series number one of the SEC, got some things to figure out. But you better start figuring out in a hurry, because it is not going to get any easier. So any way you want to spin it, it was a train wreck at Columbia, Missouri, but there's still so much talent. And that starting pitching, I understand they were not good this past weekend, but those guys are dudes. And I'll put my money on those guys more often than, way more often than not, if that makes sense. So I hope I kind of answered that question. All right, guys, appreciate it. Thank you so much for tuning in to Locked On Vols. Your first listen each and every day. It's a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. No better time. Make your second listen Locked On College Basketball. Tennessee, the Sweet 16 against Florida Atlantic University, the 4 against the 9 seed, Thursday night, 9 o'clock. Can't wait to watch it there. It's going to be a freaking blast. Appreciate you guys as always. Check out Locked On College Basketball. Same time, same place. We will do it again here on a Wednesday. This is Locked On Vols.